and talk to them specifically about, is there a need for a forensic audit? So we were able to put an RFP together. We hired a company, Freedom Group, which is a group of neutral organization that's a group of CPAs. They were able to log in to look at our books, QuickBooks specifically, and what you see is the results of the letter in front of you. What I'd asked them to do to see if there was any potential need for a forensic audit to whether we dive in here or not, and what they've sent back is, as you read, less than half of the transactions had a breakdown or reference to which fire district it applied to. None of the transactions had documentation attached to it, which would be necessary in identifying the breakdown between districts. It doesn't appear to be feasible to apply the 40-40-20 split to the transactions without breakdowns, as some transactions may be for a single district only. Well, later on in our meeting, you're going to see where we were able to do that on our own. The forensic audit consists of procedures, which includes a review of documentation supporting the transactions. As noted in the paragraph above, none of the transactions had documentation attached to them, which would prevent an accurate assessment as to the validity. The letter in brief says that there's not enough information here to really do a forensic audit. That's how I read it. We thank the person for their time. It really didn't do us very much good. So that's the results of that request. Any questions?
You kind of told us what we already knew.
Yes, sir. It was validation, truth of the matter.
Without anybody going through and digging up and trying to find the documentation that wasn't filed, it's going to take a lot of hours of digging through if those didn't even be found.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why we chose someone that's literally out of state and neutral and has no idea about, you know, the merger and any of that, because we wanted honest eyes. And this is what they came back with. What we agree is there hasn't been a very good plan and documentation.
So if we move forward and dug farther, we might not find anything if everything has been so generic and not.
Well, I believe what has happened, and with discussions I've had with Susan and with Chief Thomas, there were entries put into QuickBooks, such as deposits, that were multiple checks being deposited, but no identification of what those checks were in there. The same with checks being paid. They might have been paid and they were for all three districts, but there's no backup documentation. When the 30th of September rolled around and everything was quickly being shoved back to appropriate districts, when we said that is our ending date, I was told by a board member from West Valley Fire, who was accompanying Mr. Hurdle in moving some of those things, that they went into one of the offices there and went, oh my, because they pulled open a deep drawer and it was full of all the backup documentation that the admin person had not filed. I do not know where that paperwork went, if it was removed, if it was left, but we haven't ever found it. So just what I was told. And I wasn't questioning anything. That was brought to me forthcoming right the day it happened. So
any other questions or comments? I think your face says it all, right? All right. 40-40-20 update.
This next document I'm going to pass around, I'm going to ask you not to talk about it just yet. I want to give you the details of it first. So, for the record, all this information that you're getting right now, we've been working on for several months. And literally we were able to put something together late today. So the reason why you're just getting it now is because it literally, the ink is not dry on it. The numbers that you see, I would like to share with you that Susan literally took her work home with her over the weekend and did 4 days straight of every invoice that we could find, she took home. And if I know her, it was spread out all over her tables and floor and counter space and everywhere else. We do have a documentation. She has shown me everything to support these numbers. But before we disclose that number, I want to double check because I want to validate, just because I don't want to send out some arbitrary number. I hope that makes sense. But I wanted you to be aware of that's where we are currently. And this is based on proven data. We have others that we're still working on, a substantial amount that is doesn't have the invoices, as you heard from the auditor or the CPA. So I am going to present to the board and make public as soon as possible our validated versions. And the ones I'm not, I'll give you a list of those that I can't validate. And I want to be real with that, because I believe that unless I can prove it, I really would rather not push that matter, but I'm going to leave it up to the board to make that decision, obviously. But I wanted to be fair and upfront and equal about this process, because as you see with this number, there is a great deal of money that is there that is owed. And we do have the documentation, like I say, but I've got to get it. If you'll see my chicken scratch, this is my documentation so far. We're going to get all the invoices in detail and in order and on a spreadsheet for everyone to read. But the board had asked us to update this, and we specifically Susan and Amber have put in a ton of time on this. And it is still, we're calling it phase one of three, because there's so much stuff there. And I wanted everyone to be aware that we are putting in, we're putting in a lot of this time and effort, and it's for our citizens, because we want to account for every dime. We want to let everyone know that we're responsible for this, and thus the measures that we're taking. It's a lot of person hours, and will continue to be a lot of person hours, thanks to Susan again. So I just wanted everyone to know that this is the first step in the documentation process. Does anyone have any questions?
I guess it's like frustrating to me to Susan, because I know that Alex has been pretty good at trying to figure this all out. So very much, I know that Wes and Larry have also put in a lot of hours to get this untangled, so thank you
also. Go to the order. I wanted to add an additional update, which I forgot to say. The board had also asked me to send a invoice. West Valley board president specifically asked us to send an invoice for our attorney fees. I can validate that we sent it by mail, and then we also sent it by email, and they have two separate opportunities to answer for the invoice that they asked us to send.
You might clarify for the audience what that attorney fees were for.
So, thank you. When West Valley was disbanding, they asked us if we would be interested in helping them. And we put together a proposal. They asked us to put together a proposal. We put a lot of time and effort into this to offer them assistance. And then they decided to go another direction. And when they decided to go the other direction, it was abruptly after we'd spent $3,000 or $4,000 on attorney's fees. And their board president said, "We appreciate your effort. We will pay for this. Thank you for your time. Thank you for effort. We will pay for your attorney fees. Just forward us the invoice." And that's where we are. We've done it twice. We have not heard an answer. It did go to the city, in case anyone was wondering. That's who is. The first one went to the city, and the other one went to the fire district, to their emails. So they've had two separate opportunities to answer and have not.
Just to clarify that, they did make a motion to that effect, and yep, they voted unanimously, I believe, to,
yes,
to approve that. So.
Yes, sir. Yes. I haven't, and I will now research it on the on their website. Hopefully I can find that, and then I'm going to record it and send it.
What's our next step? I've had a discussion with the president and I just want to see what the other board members think. I mean, you blatantly say you're going to reimburse us when Tammy asked him and nothing, crickets.
Yeah, I mean, I asked the question during the meeting and they made the motion right then and there to do it.
Yeah, we were trying to be good neighbors and stepped up, but I think they owe us the money and they should pay it back, which is my opinion. We keep taking all these hits and our taxpayers are taking these hits and we're just trying to do the right thing. So we asked our board president to go on a visit with their board president.
I don't think so. I think we ask our attorney what our next step should be. I think we need to do it very legally.
Talking about $3,000 or $4,000.
I know, but it's a quick question. It's a quick question. I mean, it's a quick question to her.
You still want to spend a bunch on
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying just a quick question to her to make sure that we're doing it appropriately. That's my only concern. Yeah. That would be my concern. I mean, if you guys want to do it that way, that's you guys can vote it that way. I don't care, but I would just go down there and stomp right in and say, but I worried about in this situation that we do it very appropriately or because I mean, I don't know, it's legally they have voted and made that decision, but how that holds up in law, I don't know.
One of the standpoints too is they said they would pay it, they just didn't say when.
Yeah.
So they were,
and they may still be trying to sort their money out just like we are.
We're not specific. But I will contact Eileen if the board chooses and at her rate, I'm gonna keep it really concise.
Well, or
do we remember about what month that was?
That was November.
Oh, December.
Well, they were in the. It was it clear?
Yeah, because remember it rolled over into January. So yeah, it was sometime in December, Carol. I'll do some more research and get it for you.
We're still battling with the county commissioners.
So, Carol, okay. I'm sorry that I didn't call you during the recall. It's my understanding that you weren't with me participating tonight. So let me apologize for that, and let the record show that Carol Harlan is here.
You know, I don't know. I don't know what's right. I mean, I would say probably if everything was just functioning fire district over there, I would say chief could call the chief and say, hey, you know, because you do the finances. But since their finances are being handled by the city, it may be somebody needing to call the city manager over there that's handling their books. And saying this was voted upon, here's the proof. We're anxious to get this resolved.
Looks like they discussed the contract with us December 21st at a special board meeting, but they have not posted the minutes.
I got the minutes forever back.
Well, I think, you know, to try to avoid attorney's fees, maybe a phone call to the city over there first, just to, I mean, even, you know, if they're sorting things out, we understand that we've seen that it's taken to sort ours out.
So. I mean, that would have been a special meeting still under a hurdle.
Yeah.
So it would have been under his staff to do those minutes.
Yeah.
But who knows if they did it.
I think let's start with a phone call first.
I think it's a phone call to the city first and ask, just say, hey, it came up at our board meeting. Do you know where we're at with this? And then that gives us the answer we need to know, either pound sand and then we go a different route, or it's coming.
Is that acceptable? All right.
More to come. Thank you for your patience. This has absolutely been an albatross for a long period of time. And we're really, thanks to Susan, we're seeing the light. So we're going to continue to work hard to make every attempt to get our monies back.
Item E, volunteer subcommittee minutes.
So in your package, you'll see there's a Sheridan Volunteer Firefighter Association minutes, business meeting minutes from February 2nd, 2022. Just to be clear, I used their business meeting this last month for a all department meeting, which, you know, discussed our operations and where we were going. So it was a department meeting. It wasn't a volunteer meeting, but we were not, we didn't take minutes for that because it was more of a training session actually. But this is the first step. They know Kapakui's here, and they're very, very well aware that they will present these and we'll get them to you guys. And also we're gonna have a platform for them to be able to speak if they have something to share, those kind of things.
The subcommittee too, was there?
The subcommittee, the only subcommittee we have going right now is our union negotiations, and we really can't, during the negotiation process, we can't really discuss it. I will tell you, for everyone involved, it's going very well. We're working very well together, so.
New business. We're going to move item E to the top of the list. We're going to get item A. We'll start to bring discussions to the keys on the line right now.
So. Yeah, in just a moment, I'm going to introduce you to Blake Jameson. His business group, he'll tell you all about it in just a moment. But what we're doing is we're going out to research to receive better services, a better return on our expenditures and revenue sources and those kind of things. I have a lot of faith in what Blake offers. He's done a lot of wonderful things for me in the past when it comes to grants and business measures and such. And I think he has a really positive program in place. He has a lot of rock stars for employees that have worked in all different lines of this business, which would be beneficial to Sheridan. And I'll let him explain more about what he's going to offer us. Blake, can you hear me okay?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Perfect. Hello, everybody. So I'm Blake Jameson. I own Tactical Business Group. I have completed the GEMT annual cost reports for Sheridan for, I think, about 3 years now. I was the former OHA employee who got the cost report program going for OHA. And then after we got that going, I left, started my own business, and started doing different consulting services. So I'm sure you've seen my name pop up on other contracts before, at least relating to GEMT with Sheridan. So this contract here, this is for billing services. So ambulance, EMS, MBA. We have a current contract in place for the GEMT annual cost reports that I complete in November. We have a 10% contingent fee grant contract already in place. So we're not modifying either of those contracts. This is for a new service. So again, on the billing side there. So billing, I started under Tactical billing service last year. I stole Angie Hambright from Eugene Springfield Fire. She was the billing supervisor there for about 20 years. I have 7 employees now. Most recently, I was able to grab Kendra Harms from City of Bend, Bend Fire and Rescue. She's been their billing manager, I think, for 22 years. And so I take pride in my team. I have a phenomenal team, great experts. And so the service that we offer, that's different than some of the other billing providers in the Northwest or even in the country, is when it comes to billing for your ambulance charges, our program doesn't just stop at billing for base rate plus mileage. So, you know, we do the basics. We do obviously bill for base rate and mileage on all of the ambulance claims. We aren't offering collection services right now. So we work with your existing collections agency to turn any accounts over to collections after 90 or 120 or however many days Sheridan decides. But going beyond, you know, my kind of specialty being revenue enhancement, is our expertise in billing for itemizables, disposables, a lot of different expenditures that cost fire districts money, ambulance departments money, but most of these other billing services aren't charging for. So, for example, with specifically motor vehicle accident and PIP claims, you'll see that a lot of the commercial insurers will pay for disposable gloves, they'll pay for medications, they'll pay for a wide range of different expenses, expenditures that are used in when responding to a call. And again, I know that our competitors here locally, none of them charge for those things. And so, you know, our focus on revenue enhancement for our clients and trying to, instead of just do the same thing that everybody's doing and going after the bare minimum, but trying to, you know, work with our clients on expanding, you know, their revenue streams really has generated a substantial amount of revenue over the past couple of years that we've been doing this. So, you know, when it comes to billing for those other services, you know, we don't make any decisions on behalf of our clients. So we would work with Sheridan on establishing a fee schedule and deciding, you know, what are some of the other things that you would like to charge? You know, if we're able to get you back some money for medications that are used on a call or things, again, as simple as disposable gloves, is that something that you would like to charge for? Because there are payers who will pay for it. But we also understand too that, you know, that can come as an additional burden to your taxpayers. And so that's, again, one of those discussions that we would have to decide, you know, what is the best way to go about doing this that does not further burden the taxpayers, but also results in a substantial increase in annual revenues for the fire department. You know, I know a common practice and generally what we've seen our clients do is charge for those disposables or you know, itemizables, charge only non-residents. So at that point in time, you know, you're not causing a burden to your taxpayers, but you are seeing additional income be generated from these enhanced services that you're offering. So the other piece of this here is, as Sheridan's GEMT consultant, there are two major pieces to a GEMT cost report. The one piece is all of your expenses. So how GEMT on the cost report side works is it calculates your average cost per transport and then multiplies that by the amount of fee-for-service Medicaid transports you provided for that specific year. And that's what your GEMT settlement payment is every year. So, you know, as I go through and I compile those reports, you know, using financial documents, expenditures, the other piece of this is the billing sites. So we have to go through and factor in, you know, billing, how many transports were provided of those, how many were Medicaid of those, how many were managed care or CCO Medicaid, and how many were fee for service. One issue that I've encountered, and this isn't new. I encountered this in Texas when I was working there for several years. A lot of billing providers, their reports aren't able to provide as granular information as needed in order to most effectively maximize your GEMT cost report. What we realized this year, especially, and this was something that when I worked for OHA, I recognized that OHA's reports aren't exactly accurate. It's the state system. You know, there's a lot that can be said there. I'm not going to dive into it, but sometimes their reports just aren't showing what all needs to be shown. And so we can't rely on that. We have to rely on the billers for the accurate billing information. Unfortunately, with this year's GEMT cost report, there is a discrepancy that is holding up about $50,000 for Sheridan Fire District from their GEMT cost report. In order to obtain that information, we need very granular billing reports that can show per claim, you know, patient first name, last name, patient date of birth, the date of service, so the transport date. The information that's really key here is per procedure code. So your base rate and then, you know, mileage, splitting those out, what the charged amounts were and what the paid amounts were from all payers. So in a case where you have, you know, 2-3 different insurances paying plus the patient, we need to be able to see what was paid by each of those individual insurance companies separately from the patient. We have not been able to capture that data, unfortunately, from the current biller. So again, that is kind of causing an issue. OHA, unless they have that very granular, detailed level of information, we have to use what their reports are showing. And we know for a fact, based on several of my other clients, that their reports are not accurate. And so kind of the other key piece to this and the initial discussions between the chief and myself about billing, you know, was the fact that my system, being a new billing agency just over a year ago, you know, I was out there looking at all the different billing software vendors, and that was the primary detail that I was looking for was, you know, what is the level of reporting? Is the reporting that this vendor, for billing software, are they going to be able to provide what we need for GEMT to get each of our clients their highest settlement? And that's something that our software does. So we have very thorough reports. It provides way beyond what the state requires and would prevent any discrepancies or, you know, payment issues like in this case. So
Blake, can I ask you a quick question?
Yes.
So when you said $50,000 granularly, you know, we're missing out on, is that figure just, is that the base figure, or is there, if we were to follow through with the program, is there a larger amount potential?
Yes. So that number, that number is a, so I'm going to try to explain this and not terribly confuse everybody. So how I determined that number was we used, so the current biller was able to provide us a summary. So how many transports were provided per year, but we didn't have the supporting documentation for that summary. Because we didn't have the supporting documentation for those numbers, you know, in order to substantiate that, we have to use what the state is showing. So the state, you know, they say, unless you can provide, you know, this, and this, you know, to back your data up, we must use what's within our system. So how we calculated that 50 or so was the difference between, you know, what the biller showed and what OHA showed. So, I mean, yeah, there is the potential that it could be off, you know, and until, well, it's not even until, unless I have that level of information, because, you know, I've had other clients that use other billers, where I ended up one way or another, we ended up coming up with a way to get that information, whether they had to hand pull it or however it got done. And we ended up finding that there were, I want to say the most recent incident here with an Oregon client, there was about 12 fee-for-service Medicaid transports. So not only did it affect you know, the GEMT cost report settlement, but they weren't actually billed to Medicaid. So, you know, that was a substantial amount. You've got to think base rate plus mileage. You know, they were missing out probably on an average of $1,200 a claim, and those didn't get billed. And so
that's the reason why I reached out to you, because I wanted to make sure that we are getting all the fee services that we can. Specifically, I was looking for, you know, if you said 50,000, and in the past you and I have worked together, and we've turned some of that into a lot more substantial return. I'm not saying that that's the case currently based on the way the fee schedules are coming out. But what we're looking at here is we're shopping our billing service to get the most potential and also give the best service to our clients, our community, as to not hurt them in any way additionally.
And, you know, one other thing kind of adding to that is, you know, we are a full service public safety consulting firm. So, you know, we do GMT cost reports. We do these, the new Medicare ground ambulance data collection tool. We do ambulance billing. You know, I'm recently became a licensed private investigator. I've got two Oregon State Police troopers who also work with us. And so we do hiring, we do backgrounds. So, you know, really the fact that, you know, we're doing so much for our clients, we're trying to kind of be that one-stop, you know, consulting shop, I guess. It saves a lot of time. It saves a substantial administrative burden. You know, we house all of our documents are cloud-based. I've got employees, an employee in Texas, Kendra in Bend, Angie in Springfield. Our employees work from home. Everything is encrypted, cloud-based. So at any given time, you know, we can access your data. We don't have to go to a third party when I need a billing report for GEMT. We don't have to wait a week or two before we get that back. You know, any one of me or my employees is able to provide that almost instantly. So.
Well, we greatly appreciate the information. The board will need to discuss it, obviously read a little bit more, but I just wanted to, excuse me, introduce you to the board and let them know a little bit about what you offer.
Absolutely. Yeah, if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer anything or.
Questions?
Nope. Okay. Carol, no, you don't have a question either?
Nope. Sounds like a good plan, though.
Well, thank you, Carol. We're going to get more information, obviously more detail for everyone so we can make an informed decision. But I just wanted that to be in the forefront because there shouldn't be any changes made until July 1st, to be honest with you. But it's going to take some time to transition. So I wanted the board to be aware that some of the things we're trying to do is improve in our billing services. So thanks again, Blake. Have a good evening.
You're welcome. You too.
Okay. Now we can go back.
Okay, back to the top.
Okay.
The capital loan discussion.
So one of the many things that I've been tasked to do is to, just like any other leader in an organization, is to direct financially the best moves for the organization. Sheridan Fire District currently does not carry capital debt. With the failure of the sprinkler system and some of the Schedule B, as Larry has discussed with you, we have reached out to a couple of finance agencies and financial counselors and ask them specific questions about our current situation. Not that we're in a bad situation, we're more in a preventive mode. And what we've been counseled to do is to talk to the board about maintaining ourselves as cash solvent, meaning the monies that we have available, not tie them up in a capital expenditure debt, such as the sprinkler system itself. And remain our monies available for other items, whether they be emergency or obviously budgeted as they are. And that's one of the things I wanted to bring up to the board. I contacted SDAO. They got me in touch with a gentleman by the name of David Albrecht, who lives in the area. He's a contractor for SDAO. You'll see in your board packets, it says Sheridan Fire District Municipal Advisory Service Agreement. And in here, it's the agreement on offering the services of finding us the ideal loan if we choose to do so. And Chief Wilbridge put together a spreadsheet that has a lot of that information in there. And he'll be able to share with you if we didn't get the spreadsheet in there. I don't know if you've noticed, there's a whole lot of documentation in this thing right now. But we have isolated and detailed specific capital expenditures that we believe would serve the district and the community better. rather than tying up our cash flow into an expenditure category. We'll be able to share those with you in more detail in just a minute, but I wanted you to be aware that we did talk to this gentleman. He was able to reach out to First Federal, which the documentation is in here. Right now, we got a pretty good loan. I was concerned because I've been talking to them since February. And today I got the loan agreement, which I have really been hounding on this person about, which it turns out that he also deals with banks as we, as the public, have to deal with banks. And so they're on their own time schedule. But we asked for a 5-year and 7-year term. Originally, I started off with a 10, but I'd rather not carry debt that long, but I'm going to leave that up to the board to decide if they want to see the 10. But you'll see in the 5 and 7 year examples that the rate that they're currently offering is 3.15 or 3, depending on if we do the 5 or 7 year. So when we first reached out, if you've been to my office, you've seen our tactical board, which is a large wide out board with a lot of stuff on it. And on that is some of the our financial goals, our leadership goals, and some of our operational goals. And in the financial goals specifically, the seismic grant takes up the largest amount of our time based on what I've been calling hidden treasures, these things that sneak up on us and that aren't in the purview of the grant itself. I sent out a bulletin when I first got here about, hey, we're excited about the seismic grant. It doesn't cost the community any money. It's $2.1 million. Well, that is what it says, $2.1 million. However, we only have access to 1.6 based on the floodplain and FEMA and a couple other things that I've been learning on the fly that puts us in a category. But also that was under the premise that everything in there would work. When they opened the walls and the sprinkler systems and everything else, we started finding these treasures, as I'm saying. And these treasures are not going to be covered under the grant, as Larry has shared with you, Chief Holder has shared with you, the Schedule A and Schedule B. With that being said, at one time the sprinkler system was said to be $175,000. So we use a round number of $300,000 to start off with, because we have other expenditures that we would like to make for the ambulance and service and a couple of other items. But I wanted the board to start the discussion about whether they're interested in pursuing this for these reasons. And then we'll be able to talk about amounts and specifics if and when you're ready to talk about that. Open for discussion.
Are you looking at variable rates or fixed rates on those loans?
It should be fixed. Yes, fixed. No prepayment penalty. There's a whole list of things. And I'm sorry, Carol, like I said, I just got this thing at 4 o'clock this afternoon. That's why I sent it all to you via email. And I'm not expecting a decision. I just wanted to start the information flow.
So how many of these extra expenses?
Sorry?
How many of these extra expenses are we absolutely sure about? Are some of those still in question?
Well, that's a great question. And that's why we went with the higher number based on the fact that these hidden treasures are coming up. There's been a couple other expenditures we submit to the state, and whether everyone is aware or not, when during a grant process, the construction company and the architect agree upon a move that is seismic related. They make this move happen with a stamp from the architect. Then they send it to the information to the state for reimbursement. The state at this point decides, is it reimbursable or not? We have had no say in, you know, some of the change orders that are going in. They read very well. Some of them don't read so well. We've had to adjust that. They had what I call trigger words in them, which is remodel. Remodel is not a word you want to use. So I've helped the architect change his language with from remodel to seismic related rebuild, those kind of terms. And we've been able to save a little money. But when they're resubmitted, we don't know the results until they return them. And then Susan is then pulls the money from the account to pay for them. We had, do you remember the amount that was returned initially? What was that big amount that was returned the first time?
360.
Originally, $360,000 was denied. And the same feeling we had a little bit of a minor stroke, but we were able to gather ourselves, and I challenged our team not to take this as the answer. We've met with the construction company, the architect. We've got them all on board with, we don't have very much money and you will help us. And they've been really good advocates and team members. And we've gotten that number down substantially, which worst case scenario, it's 225 right now. Again, I'm concerned about, we're still 3/4 of the way in remodel mode, as they would say. Seismic upgrade is what I call it. And specifically, we ran into issues. We knew about the kitchen. We agreed to that, which was 46, 43, actually. The bedrooms, we were told in board meetings, and I followed up and I found the recording that that would be covered by the seismic. It was not, based on the way it was worded. But we were able to go in there, and I was able, with Larry's assistance, is to convince the architect that a pony wall is not seismic supported, even if they run it to the ceiling, is what Gloria, the state person, originally said. I challenged it with, that is not a load-bearing wall. Why not move the wall to where it currently shows in the blueprint to a load-bearing wall? So they're able to use the load-bearing wall, which is the back wall of our structure, to seismically support it now. Now, we're still going through, fighting back and forth with the architect on the wording for that, but that was able to save us a substantial amount of money. So long story short, we're constantly working with evolving, changing, resubmitting. We're driving Susan crazy because she has to allocate, reallocate, renumber, and it's just a massive project that many people could do just that. So at that point, we knew that we had better have a contingency plan, because at that point, you know, that $400,000 was looming. So that's when we reached out for a plan for financial assistance if we needed it. Now that we've able to reduce this down, we do have some monies that we did budget for, but not enough to meet that number. So talking to financial advisors, they were very adamant about, all of them were the same. Stay cash solvent, use your monies well, especially if you get a decent rate, which 3 is a darn good rate right now. I caution everyone, because I literally watched the home rates change last month. I'm not saying that the commercial loans will change, but they're gonna change. So I welcome any discussion about it. And if I can answer any questions, I will. But also, David said that he would be happy to answer questions when we start the ball rolling, if we do. I hope that was a good enough explanation.
No, that's good. And maybe this is a little off in the weeds, but not too far.
Can you do this?
I am going to try to do my best here. It's a two-parter. It's a two-parter. There's a reason. There's a method to my madness here. Do we know approximately how much the dorm rooms are going to, where we're going to be with what we will
worst case of? We were in the war room, we would know.
I know,
because we have it all written down.
Just close, just approximate.
Yes, give me 2 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah, he'll give it to you.
Okay, right? And then there's a method to what I want to just get out on the table.
All right.
And then I'll follow up with the rest of my answer.
The dorm room remodel, it's going to run just over 100.
And that's going to be our share?
Yes, that is our share.
Okay. And, you know, like you said, we were presented by previous administration that was going to be covered. I do want, this is what I want to make clear, because we're bringing this out and being transparent. I want everybody that's here to understand, especially people who are not staff there. The reason we say and the reason we went for making sure these dorm rooms were done, these dorm rooms were not permitted by the county, for one, when they were put in, and they were a fire danger. There was so many fire violations that if we would have had a fire marshal going to a business and seeing what we saw in that dorm room, they would have shut those rooms down and not even be able to use. So they had to be done. And so that's why I want community members to understand that we were not, when we made the decision to redo these dorm rooms, it wasn't just because we wanted nice new dorm rooms for our staff, which we do. They were illegal, and we could have been in a really a lot of trouble had something happened. So that is my statement to that. As far as cash solvency, I agree that I think we need to look at a loan and keep our cash where we, if we need something in an emergency, we have something there. And the other thing is that we have not had a loan for, we've paid cash for everything. We've paid cash for the medics. We've paid cash for the engine. It's good to do a little loan to get us a little bit of equity and just build our credit if something were to happen down the road also. Just my thought on that.
And Larry was able to find, I haven't had a chance to present it yet, but some of the expenditures that we would do if given the opportunity. So that way it would be beneficial to the organization. And, you know, like Tammy said, we were able to buy our ambulance outright, which saves us a great bit of capital expenditure there. But when you buy an ambulance, it doesn't come with the equipment in it. I know that's shocking. I can give you a whole list of very expensive items, but some of the things that we had talked about is in this loan, the building will be completed with the kitchen remodel, the dorm rooms remodeled, the sprinkler systems done, and then brush 9/8 skid unit, which was imploded, has to be replaced. That's a capital expenditure item we would pull anyway, and that we've already ordered, that is still a few weeks out, 4 weeks out, we don't know for sure, and the amounts. And then also we have been back and forth. Our first, we ordered two pickup trucks, as everyone in our organization knows it, but the community, we attempted to save our Conflag monies, which is currently still in Southwest Polk, which is going to be discussed at a later date. But we had the money to pay for these vehicles outright because we reserved that money for such. With that being said, part of that was we had put in the, for two vehicles out the door without lights, without stickers, was $72,000. The first one came off the line, what is today? Today, first one came off the line today. Delivery is going, they're gonna deliver to McMinnville. The next one should come off at the end of the month. So these things will be coming in the near future, invoiced as separately. We have the monies already in the budget. So if we decide not to do that in a capital expenditure, we have the money set aside already. And then when we get our monies back from the Conflag, we'll just replace that monies in the capital expenditure category of vehicle replacement. Our goal is to continue to add to that fund. But we have talked about this extensively. I also agree with what Tammy said about carrying some debt. I'm not a fan of a lot of debt. But any organization that operates at any time will carry the right debt. And that's one of the things I wanted to share with everyone is we communicate very well as a group. The board is very supportive. And if we decide to do that, based on obviously what plan we go with, if we do, this would be a capital expenditure item that would be coming out anyway, out of the line item that we budget for every year. We can do. There's no prepayment penalties. We don't have to put any collateral with any of these loans. The rates are pretty good, we believe, based on the standards out currently. So I would entertain any questions anyone may have.
I think it's something we need to keep in our pocket for sure until we find out what our final expenses are going to be on some of this stuff. So we need to be capable. Did they give you a time frame how long it would take to set one of these up?
I may I caution one thing, and Chief Woodridge could verify on this because he made the meeting this morning. We found out that they are now going into Schedule B funding. They're out of Schedule A in certain categories, meaning we are about to be responsible for, you know, they've gone as far as they can in certain grant categories. So we're about to be responsible for our portions. So we have to make a decision in the near future, very, very near future.
What's the timeline? Decide, okay, we're going to get this loan. I mean, this is something.
If you did it today, if you did it today, it would be the first week of May when they funded the loan. It's almost a month out.
And again, and
if the bill comes due from the seismic upgrade, say a portion that we know we owe, how long do we have to pay that?
A net 30, net 60, I believe. So we have the time we can do this. But again, not to be an alarmist, I caution anyone about waiting too terribly long one way or the other because of the rate changes that will more than likely occur. And when we do the levy discussion a little bit, we'll talk about inflation, and it shows specifically there will be a rate freeze eventually, but not right now. The feds are going to have to do something.
I personally think that it would be wise to move forward with it to secure the loan. Even if you don't use the loan, you're at least securing it at a lower interest rate.
Great point.
Rather than waiting for it to go up a point or two, and it's going to cost us that much more. I also want to make sure that the public understands this isn't money being borrowed against the taxes. And I know I've said this before, and that we get ourselves into a pickle like West Valley got themselves into a financial cash flow pickle.
No, it, very good point, Carol. Thank you for that. The reasoning is that we are going to maintain our solvency. So we will be very okay with our finances. My goal has been, since I came through the door, is to improve that, add to the carryover each year. And with, as you see, with the 40-40-20 split, there's a lot of variables here that I am unable to control. We're hoping that these monies are as they are, and we'll be able to add that to the cash solvency. And then we anticipate, if everything goes perfectly without those treasures happening, we can pay this loan off maybe even sooner if we choose, if everyone decides to go with this, which is, there's no prepayment penalty.
That's always an option. I mean, we could take that loan out and something could happen in 2 months from now, and we go, we don't want it. We could take it out of cash carryover and pay it then. I mean, I guess at this point, I mean, does anybody else, you guys have any other questions for the chief on it, or?
I'm kind of with Carol, and I think we need to start moving forward. We sit on this too long, we're going to be behind.
I'd like to make a motion that we give the chief the direction to proceed and obtain the capital loan for us to handle.
I second that.
So, motion and a second. Any further discussion?
My concern would be that the state doesn't make approve some of the reimbursements on the seismic work.
And what we've done is our best reference, because we've talked to the construction company and the architect. We're in the phase now to where what we see is what we're going to pay. And that's why we went ahead and elevated it just in case. So that 225 that we're telling you about, you know, we still have, you know, 75 there because, excuse me, the way the loan originates is 325 because of the fees. So we would actually have 300 value out of it. Does that make sense? Because originally I had asked for 300 and then when he expressed to me the fees would be 20 plus thousand, I was like, oh, okay. So we have to ask for that amount.
Further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carol?
That was an aye for me.
Thank you. Motion carries. Office Administrator, applicant update.
So we have, we originally had 33 applicants. We narrowed it down to 15 based on our criteria. Thanks to Susan, Carol, and Tammy for being part of the interview process. We took it down to 5 to 3, and now we're at 2 persons that we interview tomorrow that are very well qualified. We will try to make our decision tomorrow if possible, and we'll let the board know with all the information, why, who, and when, I guess you would say. But we're really excited about the two remaining participants. They seem to be very qualified and also very outgoing and personable people, which is what we need. So we'll be able to fill you in more at the end of the week. I'll send out an email to everyone, let them know the status of what has happened. But I want to be very clear. If I do not believe that they're going to fit, we will go out again, because this is a huge opportunity for us as an organization to continue moving forward or get into a stalemate. We don't want to do that. So I wanted everyone to know that this is extremely crucial for us to make the right decision, obviously. But I will keep the board updated on the results.
I think you're going to find the two that we did come down to after our interviews. I think you're going to find one of those will be a very good fit.
Again, thank you guys for putting in all the work. We appreciate it. Very, very labor intensive.
Civil Service Board.
As you know, the board was presented with candidates and the candidates were chosen. I have been working on rewriting the civil service guidelines for Sheridan, because they were blended as 3 organizations, and we're separating that. And we are hoping to have our first civil service board meeting. If it's not at the end of the month, it'll be the first of next month. Obviously, we'll give a report to the board on who, what, and how. And then we'll give you guys a timeline on when we're ready to give a test, which I've started the advertisement process, which kind of skips over into that in just a moment, which we've already had several good candidates apply. We have a few more candidates. One of them finally finished her paramedic rotations, everyone. Becca, congratulations to Becca. It only took 9 months to finish 5 rides, but we appreciate the effort. If no one knows who Becca is, please raise your hand. There you go. So we're in the process of looking at single role paramedics and dual role paramedic firefighters, based on the fact that if you haven't paid attention to the job market, private competitors are offering $15,000 sign-on bonuses and they're not getting anywhere. So The market is bleak, to be very, very clear. Our friends, the big brother in the county is not able to staff 2 ambulances because they can't hire anyone as of yet. Good luck to them. Hopefully they get people after we hire ours. So, any questions about that?
Talked about the next one already. So.
Yeah.
How about that one later?
Yes. Unless anyone has questions about that. Brief, the matter is that we, with Homer leaving, we had a position open on Donna's shift. Everyone, our crews, by the way, I'd like to, our volunteers and our career people have worked together tremendously to fill these gaps in response postures, and they've done a wonderful job of propping each other up, and it says a lot about their tenacity and their abilities to work together. We greatly appreciate it, because it allows me to sleep at night, which I really, really like. But everyone is to be applauded, and one of the training sessions that we had last week was about continuing that momentum. We have a lot of good folks. We want more good folks. So if anybody out there knows of anybody who wants to volunteer, let us know, because we'll absolutely put on anyone that wants to help, but that meets the criteria, of course. With that being said, we visited with a single role paramedic today, informally, of course, that is finishing their firefighter cert in the next 2 weeks. So it kind of fell really well. But that still means, as we'll talk about in a minute in the levy process, we're absolutely going to do our best to increase our service potential for the community. And we'll talk more about that in just a minute, of course. But I wanted the community to know that that is one of our goals, is to continue this positive workforce that we have, increase our volunteer personnel and also our career personnel to meet the needs of the community. And that's one of our number one goals in our strategic plan. By the way, that process has started as well. Hope you guys like to read, because these things are 75 to 100 pages usually. And I know everyone loves homework. So that's in our near future. And also, I send out information about ISO. My goal in the next 2 years is to be regraded, where it is 66.7. A 70 takes us from a 4 to a 3. And it has everything to do with staffing, water supply, dispatch, and the ability to send adequate amounts of personnel to the first alarm assignment, meaning the fire. So we have a potential here to save our community a ton of money, but it's going to take time, effort, and personnel to make this work. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in the levy. Any questions for me at this point?
Before we go on, I'd just like to thank our professional staff and also our volunteers. I know this is a trying time, and I'm very happy that you've all stepped up to make this all work. Couldn't do it without you. So thank you very, very much. So with that, we'll move on to the levy presentation. So must have been practicing.
Oh, about 10 times now.
Before we go, can I ask one question? I'm sorry.
Are you doing this again?
I'm sorry, but there's a whole section here that I didn't get anybody, just nobody said a word about.
I know, and I'm trying to avoid it. So go ahead. The truth of the matter is, I literally, these agreements that Tammy is about to talk about.
No, I'm just.
She is very, very well astute and in tune with my missing of several items. But the main thing is that what you have in your packet is the agreements that don't cost us any money, that gives us the right to untangle the 40-40-20 with the invoices. And with that being said, we're still in the process of untangling, so we're working on getting our money's worth. And I just wanted everyone to be aware these are not really binding contracts as such.
So are we dealing with these, or are we clean?
Tactical is Blake.
Okay.
That we just talked about.
Okay.
You guys didn't move forward with, we're going to need more discussion about it. I thought that's what we had said.
Yes.
Kathy Taylor is 40-40-20, which we talked about. We're still working on getting it unwound. And then the other one was the audit. That's the other one. So that's the only three that are in there. I apologize.
Okay.
I should have been more specific. I am not doing very well.
Well, I was like,
oh my gosh.
They were in here and I was like, nobody, unless I just went to sleep for a second.
Oops. No, you're right. I need another energy drink or something. I don't know what's going on.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
We can talk about these.
Oh, thank God.
Well, I would, let's just put these on the next agenda. I get to revisit.
Sure.
Yeah. Good.
Sure. And I'd be happy to explain them to you one-on-one as well. I do a better job with that, apparently.
You and I have talked about these. I just didn't know where we were at. So that's good.
Yes. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. Now I feel terrible. Okay. So, Harry, may I proceed, or do you want to?
Yes,
ma'am. If you look around the room, I want you to see who is not. Do me a favor, if you're related to the organization, you're an employee, you're a volunteer, you work for the organization or volunteer, please raise your hand. All right. We don't have a really big audience from our community, do we? Thank you. And thanks. So to me, I take that as I need to do a better job of getting this information out. And when we talk about this in a moment, I'm bringing you up to speed on some of the changes, the details that we're using now to get more information out. But I need all of us to put our heads together to come up with a better message and a way to reach people. Because I understand that there's several people in our community that doesn't even know this is happening. And I'm running out of ideas. Every media platform, social media, the mail outs are happening this week. We've got signs starting to be hung. Signs are starting to be hung throughout the city, and more to come. So I challenge you to come up with ideas and listen. Someone from the public has an idea, let's write it down and let's present it and let's get going with it. Because this is either really good news that no one's here or it's really bad news. I am a positive person, so I'm assuming that everybody is for us until they're against us. So if you look at the agenda, you'll see some of the explanations for the levy. We've all been through this a couple of times, but I want to stick with the format. And the first thing I've been doing in the community and at the social meetings and the business meetings is telling people that we apologize. And I throw people off when I say apologize. Our apology is based on a simple premise that in the past, our organization, no matter who was here or who was in charge, it's still our organization, didn't do a very good job at communicating and being transparent with the public. I now own that, and I am going to do a better job at every turn that I can possibly do to share this information and be transparent about our organization and what we would like to accomplish. And I can't do this alone. As we said in our training meeting last week, that we have a really good group of people, but I want everyone to know that transparency, truth, accountability, and physical responsibility is our concerns. And others before self is one of the mottos that we're using, as well as do the right thing. And if we stick to the simple premise of doing the right thing, we can serve our community better than it's been served in a while. It's not a competition by any means, but we see need for improvement, and that need for improvement is communication. So we're going to try to do a better job. No, we're not going to try. We are definitely going to do a better job in communicating. So if I were to ask the audience what our levy is about, let's just back up and say, what's our current levy number? Can anyone tell me what that number is? I'm sorry? Yes. What?
36 to 11.
All right, so that's our levy measure number, 36 to 11. So what is our current levy amount? Is it $1.46 or 35 cents? How did you get that?
$1.11.
So, thank you very much. Permanent base rate is $1.11. Who came up with this? In 1994, 1995, there was a Measure 5 that went into place that put a limit on taxing. And that taxing, our Sheridan, is $1.11. So that is our base. So $1.11 is where we start. Since 2003, we have had a assessed value of 35 cents. So the $1.11 and 35 is 146. That's where we've been for many, many years. So in just a moment, when we go through the sheet of examples, you'll see where monies have decreased, values have increased. And that's why we are needing to ask for more money. What day is election day? May 17th. We've also asked when the mailers are going to go out for the ballots. We're hearing the 26th of April and then the first week of May. Depends on who you talk to. So we're hoping that we can get a better number for everyone then. But if you continue on down, and it gives examples specifically of what we're asking for, and that is 88 cents. So for us to be able to ask for 88 cents in the levy, it has to be reduced back to 111, and then 88 cents is added on there. The 35 cents goes away. Make sense? So what is the total now? Say it. $1.99. That is not just some number we picked out of the air. That number was, we put a subcommittee together and we asked them to come up with this number that served our citizens, that met all of our needs to serve our citizens better, but didn't overwhelm them. We do realize that there is an increase in fees, and we have examples of that that I believe have already been passed out. And we'll reference that in just a moment. But if you go through, the main thing on the measure 36211 is, what will you receive for this $1.99? And in it, simply a yes vote will get you the replacement of the expiring levy. First and foremost, our levy expires, current levy expires the last day of June, and it will not be renewed unless the voters approve it. So that means if it's not approved, it goes back to 111, and that is 31.5% of our budget lost. So that is a large number. Now, as Pete is being on the subcommittee, he'll share with you moments about the discussion we had about, we really want to do we want to stick with 146 or do we want to go to 199?
So we discussed the options a lot. We were everywhere from $2.30 back to $1.46. Kind of the final decision that we came down to, the $1.99 was a staffing issue. We have essentially one ALS ambulance staffed right now. When that rig goes out the door, we're essentially uncovered. We don't have another ambulance. Our transports aren't right around the corner. They're to McMinnville, they're to Salem, but to Dallas. So it leaves a big gap of somewhat unprotected time for our citizens. And all of us agree that that wasn't acceptable. We just don't feel good about it. When you have a second medic, you overlap and cover so much. Well, one's out, the next one goes, the other one's probably coming back from the hospital. It covers a huge amount. And everybody on the subcommittee agreed, this is too important to not put out to the public. And it's not going to get better. Calls are going to increase. The other issue that we looked at that a lot of times are overlooked, because 80% of our calls are EMS, is fire protection. We don't have 70 volunteers anymore. And it's not anything anybody did here. It's just the new generation. People don't volunteer. We can't get people. And trust me, we try. We try to get people that were volunteers back. We just don't have time. They don't want to do it. The requirements to do it from the state level and training, and it's just too much. It's overwhelming. People come and get an application. They don't come back. It's too much. So faced with all of this and thinking, where are we going to be in 5 years? This is not a decision that we're just making now for this year and where we stand. Where are we going to be in 5 years? How much busier are we going to be? When I lead it towards the fire stuff, these are dual role people. These are also people that during the day, if we don't have volunteers, are going to get on a fire truck and go to the fire calls. It's not just EMS. So there's a big picture of having two people or four people, sometimes five a day. It makes a huge difference. We can't go in and fight a fire, as all these folks know, if we don't have enough people. We can stand outside, we're watering the window, but we can't go in unless we have four or five people on scene. So there was a lot of factors that came into this. At the end of the day, we all went, we have to ask the public for this. And we hope we're right. I mean, it's not a discussion we took lightly. You walk away wondering, are we asking for too much? Should we have gone with the status quo, but it didn't feel right. For any of us, it didn't feel right to stay where we're at. We've survived off levies, I think, for 15 years now. This will be the fourth 5-year levy we've done, so I believe.
20, yeah.
So, and it hasn't really gone up, but the cost of fire trucks have went from 200,000 to 500,000. Everything has gone up and we're not keeping up. So our decision was we have to ask. It's not, in our eyes, it wasn't unreasonable, but it's a raise. And we know the timing is horrible. All of us realize the economy sucks. We know it every time we pull up to the fuel pump, everything else. The timing isn't good, but our other levies ending, we had to take action, we had to do something. So that's how we got to this decision. And we all agreed in the end, this feels like the right thing to do. So that's how we got to the $1.99.
So if you look at measure 36211, a yes vote replaces the expiring levy. It will staff a second ambulance 24 hours a day to meet our increased demand for service. Replace expiring personal protective equipment. We'll show you the examples of the costs of this material in just a moment. Increase the basic operational revenue that would allow continued services. And we're going to expand on that by saying better. We're going to offer more as much as feasible. Keep our current insurance service rating ISO at a 4. As I said earlier, we're only 3 points away from a 3. What happens if the levy fails? The potential is that that number could go down to a 5. And if it does, it is 2 times more money than what the levy would cost the citizens. It's what it's going to cost in insurance. It's not a scare tactic. That's the truth. The potential is there. We don't control the insurance organizations, so we don't know what the rates will be, but I wanted the public to be aware of it. The potential is there again. A no vote on the levy would not renew the levy, and the current levy of 35 cents per 1,000 would end, leaving us with $1.11 per 1,000 of assessed value. Operational funding would be reduced by an estimated 31.5%. Leave only one ambulance in service. Wait times for a trained responder and a second ambulance will increase. The personal protective equipment will not be replaced. So our limit, our entry into IDLH atmospheres or into fires would be limited based on the equipment that we have available. Potentially cause a change in our ISO, as I talked about. These are the yes and no's. By law, I cannot tell you that I'm for or against this measure, but the information is here for you to decide, to go through, and hopefully that information helps you meet some type of decision. So one of the things that we picked up from our last town hall meeting in Boston was be more specific about what they're going to get and why we're asking for this. And what we did was Chief Woldrich put together some comparable charts. The first one we're gonna start off with is the color chart. Everyone see the color chart? And it talks specifically, if you care, inflation all the way back to 1913. This is from the US government, which goes all the way out to 2020. And the meat of this is I want you to see that in 2000 in the USA, U.S. median household income in the USA was $42,000, in Sheridan, $36,000. That's a difference of $5,400. Now, 2020, median income in the U.S. is $63,000, in Sheridan, $52,000, which is a $10,000 difference. You see what is occurring with inflation. If you turn the page, let's talk about home values. The graph you see here is based on the median sales prices of houses. In Sheridan in 2000, if the person had the money to buy at $109,000 and sat on a few properties, Sheridan in 2020, that property could be valued at $342,000. Now, there's a difference between true value and assessed value. And that's what I want everyone to know about. That assessed value is not the actual value. What is the assessed value? Estimated. Right? So you'll see these numbers are different, but I wanted you to be aware that there has been a large increase over these years. And if you look at 2000 to 2020, you see there's a steady climb. So turn the page to how much does a fire truck cost? Now keep in mind, inflation has occurred all the way across. It happens to the fire service as well. So in 2000, a brush truck could be bought between $65,000 and $110,000. A fire truck between $285,000 to $455,000. This is based on what you put on it and what you ask for equipment-wise or services. 22 years later, the same brush truck starts at $102,000 and can go to $195,000. This number is already wrong. We've reached out and looked at a brush truck. It's $280,000 to $300,000 equipped for our area to work with. There's been a large jump. If you've been out vehicle shopping, you know what I'm talking about. Everything is more expensive. An engine, $605,000 to $955,000 based on how it's equipped and what it's used for. These numbers are from the service organizations, manufacturers. This is where we've gotten these numbers. So the measures are real. And the reason we're showing the public this is because we want you to know the value of what you're putting into us and what you're putting into the community. There's a lot of value here based on what you're paying versus the actual cost of items and equipment. And we haven't even talked about personnel. So let's look at, turn the page, page four. This is what a firefighter must have to fight fire with structurally. In 2000, that amount was $5,080. And 2022, if you were to add up the same equipment, it's $12,590. That $12,000 shows a $7,500-ish difference. So this is what we're talking about when we talk about replacing equipment. In 2000, we could have bought a lot more personal protective equipment than we can now. So we're under the same stressors as the public is about affordability. We have to be very careful with how our money and your money is spent. So we have, that's why we have the fiscal responsibility and the plan in place. If you'll turn the page, you'll see that for a wildland firefighter in 2000, a cost to outfit was a mere $1,900, which is still a lot of money to me, let's be clear. In 2022, $5,400. Apparently the worms that build the fabric have increased in value. So, which it shows to be a $3,500 plus.
So which for our area are, do we typically have to outfit them for or?
Both. Okay. And that's why we will do more structural fires. Well, normally, let me back up. In 2020, and that was totally opposite because, you know, of all the fires that happened in Oregon, which was an extreme fire season. But the reason this document exists is because we would like the public to be aware of the extreme costs of doing business. Volunteer or career doesn't matter. We still have to equip and supply our people with these devices to, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. A monitor for an ambulance is $38,000. The stretcher system that goes into the ambulance to load people into the back of the ambulance is around $58,000. The ambulance itself without anything in it, as we know, is $265,000 to $285,000. These numbers are not being made up. We know because we've spent them. Our board has taken upon themselves and been very responsible with our monies and was able to save this money. That's why earlier we discussed we had zero debt. We're very responsible with this money. We don't take it for granted. If given the opportunity to move forward with this levy and there's a yes vote, rest assured that your money will be treated appropriately and spent correctly and used to its greatest advantage for your community and our community as well. So we'll take questions in just a moment if you have any. Let's go to the next document. It shows real market values versus taxes extended and yearly increase. So I did some more research because someone asked me today, if you'll look at 2011, 13, and 14, 15, I did some research, and this is the Feds put a hold on rate increases, which I didn't realize occurred in these particular years. But we from the research, we were able to determine why these numbers didn't go up. So when you vote, if you decide to vote yes for this levy, there is an increase yearly. Our previous document that you saw attached, to our agenda, the back page down at the bottom gives you the what cost will be assessed from the amounts approximate. But again, these are approximate amounts, and you can see an increase from 22 to 27. So each one of these levies are a 5-year term. They cannot be changed. They have to be re-voted on again at the end of that 5 years to either renew or increase. So that, just be aware, if your money's, if you decide to go with a levy, you have to vote again in 5 years. So please be aware. Does anyone have any questions about this first page? Our second page, if you'll turn your page, is we went to Boston and we had some of the farmers in the area ask them very good questions. And some of those were based on numbers. I did an estimate at $300,000, just a value number, so we could see how the formula worked. Some of the numbers we received in Boston, I was not ready for. And an example is $1 million of farm value. You'll see that the assessed value for $1 million is $450,000. And currently that person that has assessed value of $450,000 is paying $657 a year, which is less than what they would be paying with $1.99, obviously, which would be $895.50, which is a yearly increase of $238, and monthly an increase of $19.88. So there is an increase there. And as we have talked about, money is very, very thin. We have to stretch every dollar just like everyone else. And I wanted everyone to be aware, with assessed farm value all the way up to $5 million, you could see what their levy amount would be, their payments would be monthly and yearly. So we need to be very, as an organization, very specific and very responsible with the potential expenditures or cost to our community. And that's one of the things I wanted everyone to be aware of in our organization. And then our citizens, I wanted them to hear that we're very aware of what the cost will be. So with that being said, I would entertain any questions about any of the information that we've gone over.
I want you to speak about that insurance again and explain that. If you go debt up, it costs you more.
One is the best.
Okay, one.
ISO 1 is the highest, the best you can get. I recently, in my previous job, took an organization from a 3 to a 1, which is an extreme amount of money to do. But to go from one classification to the next, from a 4 to a 3, considering we're only 3 points out, is absolutely achievable, which gives you a discount. Now, where we run into forecasting problems is, you may have State Farm, they may have Farm Bureau, they may have Progressive, whatever. Think of a name of an insurance company. I don't control their rates. They choose to recognize or not that savings based on fire protection. And that's the hardest part to understand and explain to people, what actual savings can they have, because it varies so much across the board. But it is available, and if you press your agent, they're supposed to give you an answer. Some people may have insurance people in their families and stuff that might be able to explain that a lot better. But based on fire protection, we are responsible for grading on equipment, amount of water available, turnout times, meaning how quickly we can get out the door and get to a scene and apply water, and manpower.
So if it goes down, and you see your 3 points from that, but to go up, it's going to make your fire rates higher.
Yes.
You don't know how much higher it's going to be.
Correct. Correct.
And you don't know what the cost is going to be from the insurance company.
The best estimate, and I'm telling you this is estimate only, from talking to people that were at fours and fives, that it's a substantial amount, almost as much as double of what they're currently paying. And I can't, based on, I can tell you what snapshot from one insurance company, I can't speak for all of them, that's the problem. And I wanna be very cautious about how we say this, because I'm not trying to fearmonger this at all. I just want the public to know that that's a potential issue. There's no guarantee you put the insurance companies. And that's the hardest part to be able to explain. So the higher the number, so we're at a four, if we went to a five, the potential is there for additional insurance increased costs. If we go four to a three, the potential is there for a discount, which would save us money, which would pay for the levy itself.
Well, that's a good way to look at it. Even past that, but if they use 3 points to get in there from down, and if you get to bring this to fruition, then your rates and your insurance, they're should go down.
Right.
I mean, it is, because it's up to the insurance.
And one of the things, too, as I said earlier, it takes a lot of us. So we would work in conjunction with the city, specifically because they were able to pull some money from the recent funding opportunities from the state to increase a water line, which is coming up Sheridan Road, which increases the potential for water use for firefighting purposes, which gives us a better grade. Now, that's still a year out. We are working in conjunction, as you probably know, with the Sheridan School District at being part of a training organization. If we were to build a three-story burn tower, that's going to gain us another point and a half. All these things are potential, but it takes time. It takes funding. It takes cooperative operations to get there. That's why I'm saying 2 years plus, which, you know, again, is theoretical based on what this insurance company they decide to do.
Like you said, there are different schedules. I choose insurance.
No guarantee.
And my house insurance on one company was lower, and then I went to a different one. It was higher, but my car insurance was lower than the one I
give
had.
And take.
So you had to kind of levy that out and see where it's going to work out.
One of the things that when I talked to some of the levy specialists that have gone through this before, and I want to be very specific about this part, is to be cautious about promising things that you don't control. We are not promising discounts. We're not promising, magic. What we're telling you is there's a potential there for one way or the other, and we have to be very careful with what we say, because the last thing I want to do is promise something that we cannot deliver. We won't do that. So, but everyone needs to be aware.
I didn't know how that was rated out. I thought it was higher.
It seems opposite, doesn't it? Yeah. Good question.
Any other questions?
Staff, any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Wes.
Board, is there anything I can answer for you? Would you like me to bring up to speed on our next goals for the levy? Okay, so our next meeting is Tuesday night, and it's going to be in Buell. And it's going to start at, everyone, six. Thank you for your patience. It'll start at six. We will be discussing some of the same things, and hopefully we'll evolve a little bit more with more information. Please do me a favor. Tell your neighbors, tell your friends, for or against, it doesn't matter. I just want everyone to be aware of and know, you know, what this is about and why we're doing it. And if one way or the other, make a decision to vote for or against. I just want everyone to have the opportunity to know what's going on. And that's one of the things that I talked to you about in the very beginning about our apology. I want to make sure everyone knows that we take this very seriously, obviously, but also we're going to do a better job. That is what has occurred in the past. I get a chance to drink coffee with some of the old firefighters on Tuesday mornings, and when they talk about all the turnouts and people hustling to the stations. And those days are gone. I miss that kind of stuff, but we are going to work hard to get that feeling back in our community. And we have a ways to go. We realize that. And we realize the timing is terrible. As Chief Woodridge said, I wish I had another 6 months to a year to prove the community how good we are going to be. Just don't have that luxury. We're kind of backed into a corner. And all I can do is apologize and say, I'm sorry. This we wouldn't do this unless we absolutely had to. And I hope everyone recognizes that. And I hope I get an opportunity to explain any questions you may have, positive or negative. I want to talk to everyone that will listen. And our people know that I like to talk. So that's one of the things that I think we could share more information with. And I appreciate your time. I know it's valuable. And know that we're working very hard to get our home reopened. When we do, we're going to bring back the pancake feed. We're going to bring back the traditions of bygone, meaning we're going to have ceremonies for promotions. We're going to have ceremonies for birthdays. We're going to ceremony everything we can to get our traditions back in this community. And we want our community members to be involved because I think that's what this is all about. So thank you again for your time. Larry, do you have anything?
Yeah, I think you got it.
Hopefully.
Thank you. So our last agenda item, audience participation, please identify yourself and limit your comments to time of 3 minutes or less. Anybody would like to speak at this time that hasn't had a chance?
There's no one virtually other than Carol. Thanks, Carol.
All right. Board comments, concerns?
I do have one thing that maybe I could throw out there. I talked with Chief Thomas about it, and maybe I shouldn't bring it up now, but the one thing that in listening with other people and talking about this levy and our fees and everything, and I'd like to throw it out just for the board to think about, and then maybe Chief can let us know his opinion, is talking about we were encouraged a couple of years ago, and when everything was all being done as one, that we added in a fee to charge for lift assists. And I would like to go back and revisit that. I think that's something, especially if this levy passes and we have two medic staff, I'd like to go back and look at that about eliminating that fee or coming up with some different parameters for that.
We can put that on the agenda. That was the next item. Was there any agenda items for next month? So I could obviously be one of them. Anything else for next month outside of the regular fair here?
I'd like to apologize for all the inundation of information, but this stuff just starts stacking up through the month, man. If I don't get it out there, I'll never get to the end of it. Again, I apologize for so much. And then it's my responsibility to get this information to you in a timely fashion. I can come up with 10 excuses, but the real one is I just didn't do a very good job of time management, and I'm going to do a better job of getting this information out faster. So thank you for your patience.
I think we understand the pressure you're under right now with everything that's going on in the district. I hope that that's going to relieve itself here in the next few months. So. Anything else to come before the board this evening? Do I have a motion to adjourn? Do I have a second? I have a motion and a second. All those in favor, signify by signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carol?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion carries. We are adjourned.
Carol, give me a call if you need me to explain any of this information. I'm sorry.
Okie doke.
Yeah. Eight 16.